morning and welcome to the Time Capsule Podcast. Today we start the inaugural episode of our podcast with the birth of radio communications as we know it today. I am your host Stanley, along with host Ryder, and we're jumping right into the history of the 20th century and to the history of our podcast.
Now, our podcast is styled around an early 20th century and 1950s feel. We want to present this podcast in two ways. First of all, to discuss the historical information, but also to have the feel that you're in the decade listening to those events unfolding. By making sure the feel of this podcast is right, we hope to make the information more relevant to the listeners. Now, we don't want to just dwell on the past. We're also looking into the future, and we want the events we talk about to be relevant. We will be connecting the happenings of each episode, not just together, but to our modern society.
Now, as this is a radio historical podcast, we have prepared some history and facts of the radio of the 20th century.
So, first, it was on December 11th, 1901. Guglielmo Marconi demonstrated that radio signals could be sent across the Atlantic Ocean.
Now, this had been researched previously by this Italian man, and he first demonstrated the use of radio waves in the south of England, very short distance. Now, radio waves had been discovered previously in Germany, but this is the first real sense of radio communications to a broad audience in the very beginning of the 20th century.
And then, slightly later, Canadian-born physicist Reginald Fessenden changed that by sending the first long-distance transmission of human voice and music from his station at Brant Rock, Massachusetts. His signal was received as far away as Norfolk, Virginia. The stage for commercial voice and music broadcasts was set, and that's from PBS.org.
Now, if you're thinking, well, if radio signals were already sent five years earlier across the Atlantic, how come 6 years later we're just now getting human voice and music? Well, the Italian transmission, as he was an Italian, was in Morse code to Canada, so that was very early radio signals could only transmit short sound waves, therefore giving us Morse code. This was our first radio as we know it today, as you're hearing me and our host Ryder, voice waves being transferred via radio.
But the first U.S. talk show featuring a host talking informally to an audience was most likely a farming program broadcast on radio in 1921, so a little out of our decade, but and this was over the WBZ in Springfield, Massachusetts, according to the historian Wayne Munson.
Now, as this is our Time Capsule podcast, we will have recurring segments for each episode and each decade. So we will have a part for the economy, a slice of life section, a bulletin for important dates, a presidential spotlight, and a spotlight on inventions.
And yeah, so each of those will have different topics for each decade, of course. So seeing as we're in the 1900s with this episode, we'll be talking about, you know, all of these things as they were during that time period. So first off, with the economy, around 1903, the U.S. became the world's wealthiest major nation with growing prosperity and technical advances and immigration.
Now, we took this title over from Great Britain, who took this title over from Germany. So this is the first time the fledgling United States is the rest of the world has been, you know, a country. The United States is really stepping into their prime and they're getting their stride in the beginning of the 20th century, especially in the early 1900s with the coming of the American military and especially the American Navy at this time.
Yeah, so the U.S. is really picking up its pace here and getting to work. And as far as the slice of life, the U.S. population exceeded 75 million in 1901. There was also the Pure Food and Drug Act plus Meat Inspection Act, which was passed. The average life expectancy was around 50. So that's quite young when you compare it to the, what,
life
78?
Life expectancy now, yeah.
80 is it now?
Yes.
Something like that. Most of the people were farmers or craftsmen of some variety, making an average of 22 cents an hour, which is nothing nowadays.
Now, this is also when we have, we have farmers and craftsmen, but the big companies start to emerge now. We have the U.S. Steel and the Ford Motor Company, both these giant megalopolis of companies employing hundreds and hundreds of people to start manufacturing goods that had never been seen before at a pace anywhere in the world.
Yeah, so you're really starting to see some heftier industrialization.
So the class divide really comes out now. You have a farmer who works away to sell his milk and cream at the store, and then you have a steel mill worker earning a paycheck wage every week, and this is really when the working class starts to rise out.
Yeah. So, you know, you're starting to get that big separation between, you know, the rich, the middle class, and the poor. And that this is, you know, we're getting a big push here. We also have some important dates of the decade. The Manhattan Bridge opened on December 31st of 1909. So that's, I mean,
nearly 30 years after. No, I don't know that fact. I'm going to look that up.
Right now? Really?
This is nearly 40 years after the creation of the Brooklyn Bridge, which was the first bridge to get from across the Hudson River on both sides of New York. So this opens up, now that we have the car, you are starting to really connect even cities with, you're starting to connect cities even with this touch of modernization and construction on a level of architecture almost never seen before.
Yeah, so the architectural side and the technology and industrialization is really gung-ho here. Like
it starts stepping up in what to form modern America here. Right, just as soon as the 19th century ends, you can really see innovation take a big leap forward, especially with such readily available steel and manufacturing processes.
Yeah. And along with the presidential spotlight, which we have here, we had William McKinley assassinated on September 14th of 1901. Coincidentally, Mr. Theodore Roosevelt became president on September 14th, 1901,
He was the youngest president ever to become president, and that is a title that still stands to this day.
Does it? I didn't know that it still stood.
Yes. Theodore Roosevelt was president from September 14th, 1901 to March 4th, 1909, when his presidency ended. And Theodore Roosevelt is known for such things as his aggressive use of the executive branch to pass laws that he so wished. He invited the first black man to dine at the White House, which was very controversial for the time. He created national parks that we know and love today. He broke up the huge trusts that were forming as a result of this rapid industrialization, such as the Standard Oil Company. And he started American construction on the Panama Canal, and he was known for his quick saying, "Speak softly and carry a big stick," which reflects the very progressive action taken as the United States becomes a huge world power and really steps into their stride here.
Yeah, so, and this breaking up of Standard Oil is one technique that Theodore quite loved, called trust busting. And you had things like the Standard Oil Company and Carnegie Steel.
Carnegie Steel is a big one. You have the Northwest Railroads Act, which breaks up the merger of two big railroads financed by J.P. Morgan, who is a very prominent businessman at this time. He's going around building his little monopoly on railroads, and Theodore Roosevelt goes, no, stop that. You have to have free commerce within the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. And then, I mean, speak softly and carry a big stick.
It's just an iconic
line. It's just a good phrase. I mean, can't go wrong with that. And as well, this year, we had some pretty good inventions, really, with the Model T, which appeared on the general market in 1908. It was, what, $875?
About that price.
Which is...
When we mentioned earlier about our yearly income of $200,000 to $400,000.
Yeah, or $200 to $400, you mean. Yeah. So, you know, to buy...
Pennies now, but back then, this is a big year if you had such luxuries as the diesel motor vehicle.
Yeah, just to buy a car, I mean, you're saving for 3 years, 2 to 3 years.
But it's a huge step forward in the world of transportation here.
Big, big step. I mean, because we had the car previously.
Yes, it was invented by a German man.
Yeah, Benz. Yeah, Mercedes-Benz. Well, his daughter's name was Mercedes, but... and that was in...
1880s.
Yeah, the previous century. But the Model T, the reason that it's so important is because it was really the first...
First widely produced vehicle.
Yeah, first largely produced vehicle with the assembly line technique. I mean, they were busting out cars daily.
Detroit became ballooned as this huge city by the influx of the mass production of the Model T, which then spread to many other elements. You can mass produce a car, you can mass produce a tractor, you can mass produce buckets and toothbrushes.
Yeah, so, you know, the mass production thing is really jumping into style here, which may or may not have been a good thing, but that's...
We'll touch on that in later episodes of the podcast. Also, in the transportation world, we have the Wright brothers who test their plane in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Yeah. So, if you can, you can't really call it much of a plane, let's be honest. It's a bit more like a glider.
It's an early glider, which makes the first manned flight, happens right in the end of the 1900s, before World War I.
Yeah, so, another big step in the transportation world, because it's considered
flight.
Yeah, it's considered the first plane. It's the first manned flight. And I mean, just think about how common flying is today. I mean, like,
the Wright brothers were bicycle manufacturers by trade, and they go out and put together this ramshackle glider, and it becomes this huge thing, and the aviation world really comes into its stride. You have the hot air balloon, which is the aviation world back then, and now you have this such wondrous technology as a plane. What's a plane?
Yeah, so big changes with that, because, I mean, nowadays you need to go somewhere, and it's more than 500 miles. I mean, even that's a bit much. You're going to fly. You buy a plane ticket and you go. It cuts down the time by hours. So, I mean, it's a big step. And then in 1900, we also had the first New York subway, which is a big change for New York city transportation.
Think about the city of New York in 1900. You have horse and buggy walking around. It's a cramped, dirty, messy city. The streets are cobblestone. Rarely ever do you have paved streets.
You have tons and tons of people. You have wagons, buggies. Everything is moved by cart and hand or horse or donkey. And now you need to go from one end of the city to the other. You hop on an underground train. You can't put trains underground. Everybody will die.
Yeah, but you know what? They went and did it. And, well, they still work.
They still work.
They still go to this day. Now, whether you choose to ride them is another story, but they do make it easier.
This was a huge step because the subway originally comes from Britain, which is where the railroad hails from, and you have this technology spread from, you have above ground elevated rail lines for commuter service, and then you can put these underground to make better space for infrastructure and building these huge cities as New York comes to be. And this quickly spreads from New York to Chicago to all across big cities have some form of subway.
Yeah.
Boston is another big one.
Yeah, Boston's another big one. And it really helps with, like you mentioned, like the space management side of things, because having an above-ground railroad running through the city. I mean, they run through the city. Of course they do. They're everywhere. But generally, the railroad was there first, and the city popped up around it. But when it comes to these things, you already had a city there, and you needed a better way to get around that wasn't by bus or by trolley. Because, I mean, trolleys were great, but they took up road space too and needed a lot of infrastructure. With these, you would make some tunnels underground and lay some track, and you had an underground railroad.
Circling back to the Northwest Territories trust-busting split-up, railroads became this, you know, huge powerhouse that have all these, you know, we have these great subways that we just talk so much about, but you have the power that comes with a railroad and transportation. Then you have people like J.P. Morgan, who are these huge financiers who make all sorts of money, who create these super high-class citizens that come to sort of run the early 1900s with their huge masses of wealth. We have the Standard Oil Company, which is run by John D. Rockefeller, becomes the first American to have a net worth of $1 million. We have these huge steps in the 1900s that come that we will be building off of.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, we had these. Now you're really starting to see the division between the rich and the poor, and then there's the middle class. Now, if we're being honest, the middle class is just the upper side of the poor. So there's that. But previously, the rich were plantation owners. They were the people that had the large farms, those that owned land in fair quantities. And now you're evolving into, you have things such as the stock market.
The modernization of the modern world is really shaped by these early stepping stones that we have.
Yeah, and it really did change how society is today. I mean, these things that we've talked about still affect us significantly.
You're listening to us right now. Our voices are being recorded by such lovely modern technology that we have, a microphone transmitting sound waves. These things that we've come to accept as, you know, just that's what we have, we're just in these very baby coming into the world steps. This radio was in the very beginning, you know, it became this super important thing that blossomed out later in the 20th century that just got its start here. You went from you needed to send a message, well, you sent it in the mail. And then you have a Morse code, which we talked about, which can be sent via radio waves. And now you have people talking on the radio that can reach these such huge audiences. 75 million people who can tune into a radio and listen to what's happened on the other side of the United States or even on the other side of the world.
Yeah, so it was quite a expansive step in the world as we know it. I mean, like you, I mean, you went from sending a letter and it taking
weeks, months
to get to where it's going, and then waiting another few weeks or months for the return letter to get back. I mean, think about how difficult that makes communication. Because you can't simply just pick up the phone and talk. It's not that easy. You have to write out a letter thoughtfully and ship it across the country and then wait for it to come back. And then you had Morse code, you know, effectively a new language to learn.
But a universal language, so you learn it once, you can talk with any. We mentioned that it was sent from an Italian man in the south of England to a bunch of French Canadians, and they got one message, and all of them understood it.
Yeah. But, I mean, that changed it, because now you can send a message in minutes,
real time.
Seconds. It's quite a crazy thing to change. It's a big change.
We mentioned Theodore Roosevelt in his presidency. He went around touring and he gave out these big speeches to all these people. But these speeches, they suddenly, you had a president and you would hear about him and he would be over in D.C. and he would come around for his elections. Now he gives a speech once and that speech can be recorded and rebroadcasted. So everyone can hear what the president has to say. Theodore Roosevelt makes big use of the radio, and we'll see that later with his cousin Franklin Roosevelt, who also uses the radio to his great advantage to reach all the millions of Americans. And the president sort of has, you know, he's this big role, but now you're more influenced by him. You have bigger perception of the president now with radio and this growing, just how the 20th century is shaping up to be and how it comes into now.
Yeah, so you've got an increasingly widespread form of communication where now you can be on one side of the continent even and talk to someone on the other side. And you don't have to wait. It's instant. So a big change there.
We go from in the very beginning sending just one Morse code message across the Atlantic Ocean, and then this invention just builds right up to radio just almost instantly when you think about history. You have in a period of less than 10 years taking radio waves and channeling them to send short messages that can't use audio, to being able to send audio, to being able to record audio. This is huge steps that all culminate and start in early 1900s. And these are the stepping stones that build off into further decades.
Yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt was this very powerful person and president when he became. It's to describe him, it's almost like he was president in his spare time, because he was such a huge figure in his own life. And he comes into presidency relatively quickly. As we said, he's the youngest person to become president of the United States. And he has so much influence on how the presidency is seen now. He really takes the executive branch and he runs with the power he has. It's very much coming into making the president this very powerful man who can just decide that I would like to create a national park. He'll write it up and he'll send it off and get voted on. And then now we have national parks. It's this. Because before it was very much, well, the president is there, and yes, he's important, but he doesn't have much of a big, booming voice that can reach to
the people
anywhere.
Now the president does something, and Theodore Roosevelt really was the president who he listened to the people beneath him. We have the coming of the industrialization age and striking, and Roosevelt listens to the strikers, and he says, "Well, I have this power as president. I will use my voice," and he speaks out to the strikers, and he gets unions really on their feet and started working. There's a huge coal miner strike in Anthracite Country, Pennsylvania, and coal is the heart of the country, and all of a sudden the flow of coal stops, and it starts to stagnate. So he goes out and he listens, and he has a meeting with all the presidential board, and he talks to these industries, and he says, "You have to have listen to the people, and you have to listen to the strikers." And he really starts to give strikers power, but he also gives power to industries to help self-regulate.
Yeah, so he really helps to bring a voice to the people, specifically the working class. And he was just a cool dude.
Very cool.
He was a very, very tough guy. And I want to mention this because it's one of my favorite situations with him. Is he was giving a speech. I don't remember where it was.
This was in 1912 in a Milwaukee.
in Milwaukee, yeah. And he gets shot.
Man, a local store owner comes up to him and he shoots him right in the chest.
And Theodore just kind of ignores it.
Moose.
He just ignores the fact that he's been shot, and he keeps giving his speech.
A speech that went on for another 2 hours, by the way.
So, I mean, how dedicated do you have to be to speaking to the public to get shot and not care and just keep going?
He had a lot of words to say, and he was going to say those words, come hell or high water.
Yeah.
Or a bullet.
Perhaps if he had his stick, then maybe we wouldn't have had this story. But, a funny, I mean, not necessarily funny, but sort of amusing situation.
A very influential man with lots of power.
Indeed. You know, we've talked about all of these things, but we want to make sure we connect them into modern society and into today's world, which, I mean, we've done a little bit along the way, but a more conclusive defining paragraph.
Stuff that the 19th century or 1900s, I should say, has given us that we can reflect upon on the modern day and say, yes, we have that.
Yeah, so we had things like
the car and the plane.
The car and the plane. Those are two very big ones. I mean, you go down the street to get some milk, you're probably driving, unless it's not a very far walk. But, and anything beyond a normal range, you're probably going to take a plane. That's just common knowledge.
The radio?
The radio is another big one. I mean, how often do you listen to the radio? Every car comes standard with a radio. You get in the car, and the radio is on, generally. And you're listening to radio broadcasts. You're listening to music.
You're listening to music. You're listening to people talking. You have that radio wave technology that's come so far that very much was born into that modern feel in these early 20th century years.
And we also had something such as the Ford Motor Company, which also
makes those cars we talked so much about.
Well, yes, but not only that, it was also the sort of assembly line style of manufacturing things where we make lots and lots and lots of them every day. I mean, the goal for the Model T, it was, what, 100 cars a day is what they used to produce? Of course, it's a lot more than that now, but that was, you know, for the time period, that's big. So you also had the mass production side of things. Things were no longer handcrafted or hand-tailored by order. They were just produced and sold.
You have Teddy Roosevelt in the Panama Canal. You have national parks. You have the Food and Drug Safety Act. All of these things have formed into modern day forms.
Modern day form, okay. Do you want to rephrase that?
I don't.
I think we might leave this in.
No.
And yeah, you mentioned the Panama Canal. I mean, think about how that affects shipping nowadays.
World shipping.
I mean, everything.
You no longer have to go around Cape Horn.
No, you just go through the canal and you're there.
National parks. We have our lovely national parks, which were born from the presidential days of Theodore Roosevelt, which still stand the testament of time. Such a lovely national resources protected, starting very early on.
Yeah, so we're able to keep some of our natural beauty alive with that, which, I mean, you see nowadays, if you go to virtually any destination, you generally visit a national park. I mean, yeah, they're tourist traps, but they're also nice areas to visit, and they have beautiful things that you don't see where you're from.
Well, I think we've well-worn our list here, and I believe it is now time to wrap up our podcast. You may join us next time for our next episode, which touched on the 1910s, which some very well-known and interesting events to talk about, including one, World War I. So I will hand our outro to Mr. Ryder.
Yeah, I agree with the worn out the list part. Yeah. So we want to kindly thank you for listening to the Time Capsule, and we hope you'll join us for the next episode. And with that, good day.